Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Sam Wong. I'm a principal at BMW iVentures, which is the corporate venture arm of BMW.
Awesome. Samantha, thanks so much for making time joining us on the Ivy Podcast today. Before we talk about your current role, current organization, want to get to know you a little bit better from your background perspective. Give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Thumbnail version. I will try to condense it into the thumbnail version. So I started off as a historian. I was in a PhD, went into a master's, and then then I sold out and went to law school because that's what Asians do. We are either engineers, doctors, or lawyers, and I wasn't going to be the other one. So law was the natural choice. I had, during law school, a Google internship that was about writing contracts. Google internships was really fun, but of course, writing contracts wasn't. So I had begun exploring the world of venture capital then. I landed my first gig at Bosch Ventures while in law school. And then I followed that up with a gig at SK Telecom, their corporate development shop. And then I finally ended up at BMW iVentures, where I've been roughly at for 4.5 years.
Wow, what a career, from a historian to a lawyer to now to venture capital. Very diverse background. Tell us a little bit more about your initial experience in venture capital. Is this basic, you know, is this something that you always wanted to try? Has that panned out to what you expected it to be? Tell us a little bit more about that experience initially as you were breaking into the industry.
I think it's funny because a lot of people, they go into venture capital and they've been trying to get into venture capital for their whole life. That wasn't my case, right? So I thought I was going to be a professor and just kind of like study different things, but I realized that I didn't like studying one thing. What venture capital allows you to do is just, you know, you pick a topic, let's just say it's AI, and then you study that market. And then, well, by the time you finish studying that market and develop a thesis, there's tons of other markets that are popping up that you also have to invest in. And so you have to get smart on them too. So I loved the part of venture capital where you could be intellectually curious. You can look at one market and then look at all of the other ones that are emerging and, you know, will continue to emerge because technology cycles are kind of exponentially changing and growing over time. And so it happened that, you know, I landed into venture capital serendipitously. I think, you know, as a young person, you're not supposed to know what you want to do. You need to have different explorations. I tried, you know, the academic route, I tried the law route, and then I tried venture capital, and that was uniquely suited to kind of my intellectual curiosity, as well as just, it's nice because, you know, when you get to do a mix of, well, diligence and, you know, just sitting there doing thinking, and then also just meeting. So when you're tired of meeting people, you can go to diligence, and if you're tired of diligence, you go to meeting people. So it's like a perfect balance of extroversion and introversion. So that's why I think this is the right path for me.
Well, that's very interesting perspective, and I could relate on many levels because you're right. Early on in our careers, it's a lot of experimentation. It's a lot of things that we're trying out. And for me, it was a little bit of a different path as I started in corporate sector. Then as an entrepreneur, I had launched and found, you know, started a lot of my own companies, successfully failed a lot of them, most of them, had one decent outcome. And then really now operating in the kind of the angel investor space where just taking that experience as a founder and paying it forward, working with a lot of the younger entrepreneurs, especially, you know, the immigrants, just like myself, I think that's something that I'm very passionate about. And now get a chance and opportunity to talk to folks from the venture capital space and learn from them as well. So in terms of your average day at your current job, you're at the BMW iVentures. Tell us a little bit more about that. What do you spend most of your time on? And is that, how does that relate to something that you actually want to spend your time on?
So So there's a lot of activities that VCs do. It's kind of make it how you want to make it, right? So I will spend my day, a lot of them, on like lots of meetings. I'll have maybe meetings with new startups, meetings with other VCs. Maybe I have a board meeting. Sometimes, you know, that's probably like a few times a quarter. Then I also will do my diligence. If I have a deal, I will do my research on different topics, emerging topics. I will do random administrative things like run our hiring process. Or I would also, I also on the side, I work a lot with EVCA, the Emerging Venture Capitalist Association, and I run their content and their newsletter, which is all about, of course, you know, building connections across the VC ecosystem, but also just producing brand, creating a brand, producing content to create a voice, just like you, right? So it's a bunch of kind of like schizophrenic activities, which I like because I get tired of doing one thing. So I do, you know, a little bit of this here and then a little bit of this here and then go back and forth.
I love the framework of the schizophrenia, you know, being just running around feeling like, you know, the chicken head cut off. But at the end of the day,
that's the fun part. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool. That's interesting. As far as the kind of the venture capital as a trade, as an industry, what were some of your findings, especially now these days, that you didn't necessarily expect that comes with the territory? Something, and I'll give you an example why I'm asking this. As I was getting more and more involved in angel investing and working, you know, collaborating with a lot of funds and a lot of syndicates, for me, the biggest challenge was, you know, saying no 99% of the time. And it's something that I had to learn. It's something that I had to get used to. So that was kind of the dark side for me of the industry that I had discovered along the way as I started operating more actively. So curious to get your take on that. What were some of the findings for you?
Gosh, the question is how dark do you want to go, Jan? but I guess on a you know, a spectrum of darkness, let's say like, you know, lightly dark is, yeah, I think, you know, people like me, I have trouble like saying no, because you know, it's someone's dream you're squashing. Maybe they will fulfill it some way other than through your money or through your help, but sometimes that's what it feels like. The other kind of dark side of industry is kind of, maybe this is on the darker spectrum end of the spectrum, is it's tough to be a woman in VC. And I learned this just going into venture, right? I started off, I think I was like 26, 27, young, kind of like, you know, naive about the world because I came out of school. And, you know, I think as a woman, I would go to events and it was very toxic at some times. You know, sexual harassment was a thing and still is a thing at events. Things, you know, as horrible as physical touching, comments, that is something that happens. And, you know, as when I started out kind of more vulnerable, that was something that probably got to my head. And it had made me want to actually, you know, consider, it made me reconsider, like, is this the right thing for me? Because I have to go out, find deals, and then experience that. At the same time, you know, I've grown older, I've grown stronger, and I've grown more experienced, which I think translates to more confidence. And that gives me the power to determine the relationships that I want to make, and also to say no and to call out things when they're bad. That's the reality, and that's sad. And I don't think a lot of women say that, because it's, you don't want to antagonize anyone, right? But I'm of the opinion that, well, you know, I think there's enough good people anywhere, and I'm going to work with the good people. So that's my spirit and my philosophy for trying to make the dark side a little less dark.
No, that's you know, interesting perspective. Thank you for sharing that. I was actually talking to a good friend of mine she's an investor at the Female Founders Fund, and she was talking about something very similar from a perspective of that kind of the unexpected, the darker side of the industry. So that's, you know, that's relatable on many levels. So with BMW iVentures, tell us a little bit more about the organization. What is the kind of the mission of the company? It's not, you know, every day that you hear that the brand as such is, you know, has the venture arm. And what are some of the things that you guys are excited about when it comes to investments?
Yeah, so the way that I like to frame BMW iVentures and what we look at? Well, okay. Well, number one, let's just say we are a separate fund. So there's different CVC types. We are a separate fund with BMW as our sole LP. And we like to invest in mainly Series A and B stage companies. And what our investment mandate covers is effectively this. And I like to say it in terms of like three things to, you know, bucket things. I love bucketing things. One is all of the technologies and startups and business models that would potentially go into the car, right? So it could be like sensors, it could be autonomous driving, it could be cybersecurity. And then the second bucket, I would say all of the things that could be used to build the car or build the company that builds the car. So things like enterprise SaaS, right? Or industry 4.0, robotics, all of the things that it takes to run the company. That's also part of the investment mandate. And then finally, the third bucket is all of the things that are around the consumer experience of mobility. That includes everything from insurance, from alternative mobility. So for example, we invested in a scooter sharing company. So things to kind of push the consumer experience around mobility to the next level. So that's how we kind of operate. My favorite things I love looking at are like AI enabled applications and supply chain. And the fund, of course, we do everything, but those are my specific areas of interest.
Wow, that's very interesting. Definitely a very unique approach. And from a standpoint of, as you meet with a lot of the great founders, they're building a lot of these really cool technology, whether than in automotive space or any other industry. Talk to us a little bit about the very initial stages of evaluating the founders. And I'll give you kind of context why I'm asking this, because I talk to a lot of founders on a daily basis, whether they're pitching their startup or just from a board advisory perspective. And for me to get involved with the founder, you know, I follow a lot of the digital breadcrumbs, so to say, of that particular founder before we even start talking about the solution that they're building. For me, it's very interesting where they come from, some of the things maybe they have done during college days. Did they join a club or did they build a club? I love the kind of the framework of cartographer versus the navigator. Did you build a map or did you follow one? So those are some of the things that kind of I pay attention to as I meet with a lot of founders very initially, early stage. Curious to get your take on that. What are some of the things that help you identify that this particular founder has what it takes for me to start moving a little bit further?
There's no specific question I ask, but whenever I engage with a founder, I'm reading the person the whole time. And I love CIA books and like books on like reading people. So I will implement all of the techniques and you know, read everything from body language to also just, I will ask you questions about your business. Like, you know, what's your go-to-market strategy? And I want you to have very logical, well thought out answers. And if you haven't thought about an area, I don't want you to, I want you to not have that ego where you make up fluff, any sort of inauthenticity or kind of like, you know, puffing up. I there's red flags for me because it shows that, well, we can't have a good relationship. So I think, you know, in the process of working with a founder, I'm always thinking about, is it someone I can work with? Is it someone that I can trust? And is he or she someone I can, who I can confidently believe in will build a company because he or she does the research, does the strategic thinking, is able to make up, you know, the mental maps so that he or she can think through any problem and solve it. And I'm really just looking for those problem solving skills, right? And it will happen organically as I get to know the person, not really like, you know, tell me about your past and good and bad, because I think everyone is used to selling themselves. It's about getting under that exterior layer and really understanding how that person works. And I think you can only do that through kind of like soft, you know, interactions where you're not like going head on.
Right. Absolutely. No, I love that framework, because at the end of the day, for me, when I consider founders, it's, you know, being a friend versus being a parent, because, you know, me as a parent, I always have to kind of put a completely different hat on when I'm dealing with my kids versus when I'm dealing with the founders that I work with, because at the end of the day, we're going to be attached at the hip for probably the next 10 years. And I want to have that relationship, as you were talking about, to speak very comfortable and candidly when things are not going well. Are we able to sit down and grab a beer and talk about some of the things where maybe you had messed up, or how do we fix certain things? So those are some of the things I think that make sense from a founder evaluation perspective that you're talking about. As we, you know, as you evaluate the founders and the business model and things, you know, you probably look at it on a daily basis many times. What are some of the trends and ideas that really excite you these days? What are you very passionate about? What are you researching on your, you know, in your free time that you think will be the next big thing?
Generally, I love all AI-enabled applications. With AI, you're going to automate and make different processes more efficient. You're going to be able to solve new problems. And I'm more about AI and applications because I think, you know, AI algorithms, just like general purpose AI, it's not an effective business model. So I would say anything in that field is interesting. And I'm broad there because, there's so many things AI can optimize. The second kind of thing that I'm extremely interested in is just generally supply chain technologies and business models. There's two fronts that I divide this into. One is digitization. So being able to collect all the data across your supply chain and use that data to drive insights and ultimately make the supply chain more efficient. The second camp of the whole supply chain technology thing that I look at is around automation. So automating processes, automating people away, unfortunately, but that's the reality, through things like robotics, or, you know, you can do digital automation so that a person doesn't have to, like, you know, respond to an email or, you know, download a certain file. So things like that are extremely interesting because supply chain is that right field that historically was really kind of untouched by innovation. And it was, you know, is more, you know, innovation there was more handled from like a mechanical approach, getting better machines, installing things like that. But now it's all about, let's look at supply chain in a holistic way and see where we can get all the efficiencies. And that's where there's a ton of innovation to be had going into the future.
Yeah, no, those are very interesting trends. And, you know, from machine learning, from AI, you know, RPA, a lot of those trends, you know, have been on significant advancement, you know, especially lately. And I, you know, I can definitely relate to some of the kind of the interest in that particular space. Particularly for me, one of the areas that I'm very passionate about is kind of the SaaS for enterprise, because that's where my background is. And I see a lot of the kind of the trends in terms of the machine learning and AI taking going to a completely next level from a standpoint of solutions that are being provided. So, you know, that's very interesting. When we talk about the whole concept of a value add investor, it's an ongoing debate, I guess, between the founder community and the investor community. There's, you know, different perspectives, different views on that. I've been on both sides of the equation. And for me, it all boils down to when I was dealing with investors, when I had gone through the fundraising rounds, the value add investor concept was all about me deriving that value from the investor versus waiting for the investor to come to me and say, here's where I can help. So that's kind of the framework that I subscribe to. And I try to get that, you know, point across to a lot of the founders that I currently invest in. So talk to us a little bit about that from your perspective, the whole value add investor concept.
Different ways investors can add value, and it should be specific to you. And this is how I do it. And, you know, it's not generalizable for everybody, but one is being BMWi Ventures. Of course, we have great relationship with the mothership. We're able to sponsor pilots, get you connected, get you access to the European market, get you started with pilots, get you knowledge, get you the expertise you need to grow a product. Also, we are a potential customer. We will push you as much as we can to the customer, which would be the mothership. And we also can give you just general learnings. And then there's also kind of the second thing is just we're very well connected. A lot of VCs have great networks. I will connect founders, and including our portfolio company founders, with the different different potential customers. So like, you know, for example, I'll be connected with like Siemens and Bosch and all of those. I can make intros to all of those if you want those as a potential customer. And then also I help with fundraising. You know, I think we have a good pattern recognition of what works, what sells, and we will work with you as a founder doing that. So for example, you know, I worked with a founder when he was pitching just to kind of like, you know, make that pitch a little tighter. These little things we take for granted, but we can add a lot of value. And then there's just kind of like fourth thing where, well, I love just kind of helping and working on problems. So for example, I worked with one of our startups on a data project. I was like analyzing like what they do is a roadside assistant. So I was analyzing kind of all the roadside assistance activities and kind of giving them insights and just kind of thinking of a framework to, you know, think through what we should do based on the data. That's probably less what VCs do, but it's also something that I also help out with founders, just because I know that sometimes when you're starting out, you might not know everything. So, you know, I having kind of looking at different startups, being on different boards, I can push strategic thinking to a different flavor that hopefully will move the startup forward.
Right. No, that's great. Great analogy from that standpoint. When it comes to building expertise or skills, you know, as whether starting out in the VC industry or angel investing perspective, what are some of the things or some of the skills that are in high demand, or from a standpoint of, you know, putting you in a position to succeed? What do you wish that you had focused on more early on in your career in VC versus what you know now?
I might have gotten, and this is honest answer, some operating experience. So I did a lot of research. I did legal work. I did a lot of corporate development work. I've been working with big corporations. I've worked at a startup that really, really failed, but I don't think it gave me that startup experience because we never really kind of scaled. But I, I kind of wish I had that, that bonding that you have as a founder, whether you succeed or not, right? To push my experience level to a different set. That said, the modern venture model is a lot different. You have partners at big firms not even having operating experience, and you know there's different models for that. I mean, ultimately we're investors. We're supposed to analyze and be good at analyzing, and so I think you don't necessarily need operating experience when you have to do diligence and just push for an investment. But that would be potentially something that I would like to add, or maybe would have added to kind of the various things that are on the CV.
Yeah, no, those are great concepts, and that's very interesting. Appreciate you sharing that. So as you research a lot, you read a lot about different industries and trends to stay up to date or ahead of the curve with regards to what you're investing in or looking to invest in. On the other side of the spectrum, just share with us, what are your sources for learning and self-actualization these days, aside from what you research on a day-to-day basis? What do you let your mind be exposed to? What's your overall content diet is looking like these days?
So my content diet, irrespective of my job, because I do venture research for my job, and I will tell you what my content diet is. It's not job related. It's a bunch of random books. I love books. And for some reason, I've been fascinated by China lately, because China is, of course, going to overtake the US very soon. And so I've been reading a bunch of books on China. I actually just finished a book called Factory Girls on like Chinese migrants going from the rural others to the urban centers where they can work in factories. Another awesome China book I had just read was 100 Year Marathon, which is basically about China's strategy to overtake the US, which was kind of pinned like over 50 years ago. And it's so illuminating because we as investors, we work a lot with kind of Chinese investors, and we have this, well, I'm going on a tangent here, but you ask, a process called CFIUS, which I won't explain more, but it basically is targeting Chinese investors because they're scared of IP being taken from the US. But that book gave me a reason to understand why CFIUS is needed. And outside of books, and this is going to be a little crazy, during the pandemic, I became a gamer. So I think the best game that has ever been created is Last of Us 2, because it blends the, you know, gameplay with just the feeling that you're in a movie. And it's just the best game I've ever played. So I think there are experiences that can be, you know, not necessarily related to your work or your research or whatever you do in your, you know, your daily job, that can just move your mind forward or just be a pleasurable experience, because hey, we're all humans, and you know, read, digest the content that you want to digest.
Oh, that's great. And you actually, the last questions I always ask on the podcast is, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others? And it's you beat me to that. So we'll definitely list those recommendations in the episode notes. Samantha, for anyone who wanted to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can check out our website at bmwiventures.com.
Awesome. Samantha, thanks so much for your insights today. Very generous with your information. Was a very short and, you know, insightful conversation for me. Personally, learned quite a bit. We'll stay in touch. What I love doing with a lot of my guests is do another episode in about a year or so to see how much of change transpired since our last conversation. What were we able to predict correctly and not? So definitely looking forward to that.
Awesome. I'm excited for the future, Yon. This was a really fun experience being here.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.